Hello and welcome to Technology and the Arts, a podcast exploring the connections between technology and art. This is your co-host, Brian Kelly. Episode 64 of the podcast features lightly edited audio from a live Google Plus Hangout on Air, conducted September 10th, 2013. In this installment, we'll talk about Paul McCartney's new album and legacy, Evernote, the removal of video responses from YouTube, the mostly underwhelming iPhone 5C and 5S announcement, new technology's potential impact on classic works of art, and setting up a staging site with WordPress. All this and more is just ahead on Technology and the Arts for Friday, September 13th, 2013. Now here are your hosts, Brian Kelly and John Lemazni. Welcome to another episode of Technology and the Arts. My name is Brian Kelly.
Lemazni.
Oh, your John didn't come out right there.
I'm John Lemazni. How are you?
I'm good. It's apparently the microphone didn't come back from the week off, so
I see.
So that's how it works. I'm good. Thanks. How are you, John?
I'm doing well. There's a couple things that we should talk about. Today was a fantastic day. Today was a really fantastic day.
I saw a Facebook post that I was mentioned in, and it started out as your ode to this day, but I didn't get to see the details, so I'm anxious to hear about them.
It was, in fact, an ode to the day. And the reason it was such a great day, there's many reasons it was a great day, but the things that I can tell you about include I did a class for Lyrisis, which is a library consortium that's national. And the class was on graphic design for libraries, which is one of my favorite classes for libraries. I think that there are many librarians who have opportunities to do graphic design and are asked to do graphic design but don't have the tools, either the technology tools nor the specific tools, you know, Inkscape, et cetera. And so this class is a great opportunity. It was 4 hours over 2 days. Tomorrow's the second class. And we go over font choice and color choice, and we go over shapes and line, and we go over layout, and we go over format, and we go over all these things. It's a crash course in graphic design for the non-designer. And as a result, it is just, I think, incredibly valuable, both for me and for participants. And I thank Lyrisis for the opportunity to do that class. And then tonight, I started my Media for Organizations class for the Master of Arts in Organizational Leadership, which is the class that course set that I took to get my master's. And so this is a new venture, different than the one that I did before when I was teaching for Rider in the same program, and met a great bunch of people. I was under the impression that it was just going to be a few people, like, you know, six or nine, and it turned out to be a whole room of people. So I'm particularly excited about that, and we spent some time learning about WordPress, because that's the main way that we share information. And of course, you're familiar with WordPress, and I'm familiar with WordPress, but I'm always amazed about how little people know about this platform unless they have been specifically asked to use it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and just to point out, we'll be talking more about WordPress later. Thanks.
That's right.
To a question that I had in a professional capacity that I asked you. So,
yeah, I'm excited about that, because I think that you found some solutions and I have my own solutions, because I have to create development sites all the time because I develop for a living. So introducing WordPress to people who have never experienced it, for me, is just a joy. It's such a beautiful opportunity to make people realize that they have a voice and that they can be heard and that they can be found. And one of the most interesting questions that came up tonight was, how do I find somebody else? Like, how are people going to find me? And I said, well, after you start to post, all you have to do is type in your name and you'll be found, you know? Mm-hmm. And they were like, wow, really? And I said, sure. Have you ever like Googled yourself? And they were like, no. I was like, you ought to try it. It's fun.
There's our 6-second edit.
Yeah. So there was that. And, yeah, so it's just been a really great week, and we're going to talk a little bit more about Evernote later because I'm giving an Evernote class at Princeton Public Library tomorrow, and it's just a great time. You know, it seems like, in retrospect, the summer was so quiet, and quiet for me right now is kind of frightening because I'm an independent contractor, mm-hmm. and it's not quiet anymore. It's like September roars, man, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm kind of in the same boat with her, so. But yeah, I've been really busy myself. But anything else you want to discuss?
No, I really want to hear what you have to discuss.
Well, where you mentioned before, you mentioned the things that you could talk about, and I have to be somewhat vague about this. Because details haven't been announced yet. John knows a little bit about it, but as viewers and listeners may know, I've been talking about playing accordion on a cover of Yoko Ono's Silver Horse that my friend Christian Beach has recorded for Main Man Records. They're putting out a tribute album in the fall, possibly at the end of this month, maybe next month. They haven't announced a firm release date on that yet. But in the meantime, Christian has been asked to play at a very special event taking place in October. Unfortunately, I can't provide any more details than that because it hasn't been publicized yet. But he is going to use the band, so that includes me. So we are going to be playing the song, just that one song, Silver Horse, at this event in October, unless something falls through. But as far as Christian is aware, that is happening. So when information about that event and the album, when that's released, I'll be able to share more with you. And I'm actually going to hopefully get Christian on a test hangout tomorrow night, Wednesday night.
Really?
Not a public one. Just
are we gonna record it?
No. I'm gonna get him used to the setup. Get figure out things and then hopefully he can join us live, and we can do a webcast with him and he can play a song for us.
Yeah, so, that would be fantastic.
So I'm gonna hope to get all that worked out with him tomorrow night, and then once he's comfortable with it, then I will, since we have 5 more episodes after this, right?
Yeah.
So, and hopefully, it should probably time it so that the Main Man stuff is announced and we can talk freely about what's going on. And real quickly, I just want to mention, because it happened this past week or so, but Paul McCartney has a new record out called New.
He sure does. He
went on a promotional blitz just before Labor Day. And that included a call into Helen Light at Philadelphia's WXPN. And
he's going to be at the, what's it called? What is the name of that bar? World Cafe Live. He's going to be at World Cafe Live.
Not that I'm aware of.
I thought you were going to tell me he was coming to Philly to do a show at World Cafe Live. That would be No. That would be the most epic thing ever.
Yeah, no. That would be like Woody Allen coming to Princeton. Oh, that's right. That is happening. Woody Allen is going to be speaking at Princeton, and I would love to be there, but it doesn't seem like tickets are ever going to reach the general public. But anyway, that was just announced today, I guess. Anyway, back to Paul McCartney. The new single is titled New. It's bouncy. There's more than a few hints back to his days with the Beatles. And as they were playing the song, and after he did this interview with Helen Light from XBN, I want to give Paul McCartney credit somewhere, and I guess this is the best place to do it.
So wait a second. You've listened to the new album.
I've listened to the first single, the title track.
I've heard that title track, and I heard, I think, one other track. I thought they were beautiful. I think it might be the best work he's done since he was in the Beatles.
Well, or Wings. I mean, remember, he did a lot of good stuff with Wings, too. But,
yeah. I mean, I was never sold so much on Wings. I was more sold on the Beatles, and I feel
obviously, but I mean, you're talking like here was the ultimate music, and then you had Wings, which was awesome. And, I mean, it was still, there's the scalability is, a little different than most musicians.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
But, it was a very, very good song. And what struck me was that he's 71 years old, and the fact that he is still inspired to get up and write and record new material. And, like we were just saying, some may say his new stuff doesn't hold a candle to his old stuff, but I think that's just a matter of context.
I think that this album speaks to his old stuff. I really do.
Well, I mean, I think the thing that people don't understand is that, anything he puts out now is never going to hold a candle perception-wise to, the stuff he did with the Beatles, Wings, and it was early solo stuff because, we've had years and decades to consume every note and essence of those songs. I mean, we're always going to give them more weight than the newer stuff.
But we have had years to consume those songs because they are worth consuming.
Well, exactly. I mean, there's that too. But I mean, and like we're saying though, a late era Paul McCartney song is still better than 90% of the stuff that's out there now.
He's a genius. He's clearly a genius.
Right. I mean, and that's the other thing. I mean,
by the way, did you happen to watch the Dave Grohl documentary on?
I haven't yet. I haven't. The Sound City.
Yeah, you have to watch that.
I know. I do. I do. I have to get to that. I mean,
and Paul McCartney's in that.
I know, and that's what I was getting to. I mean,
That's
the thing with with Paul is that. Yeah, you have other rockers like the Rolling Stones and the surviving members of The Who that are still active and touring, but I mean, not anywhere near as prolific as McCartney. And he's always writing and recording. And then it's not even just the Paul McCartney stuff. It's the stuff he's doing, the classical music stuff, the electronic music side project that he has with Youth, a trance artist called The Fireman. I mean, not many people realize Paul McCartney has an electronic act. I mean, and then you have the work he did with the surviving members of Nirvana. And that absolutely rocked. That was awesome.
It was very good. It wasn't as good as his new album, but it was very good.
It was, the song wasn't as good, but just that.
He was trying to prove something with that recording that I don't think was necessary for him to prove. It was like Helter Skelter Part 2.
I think he just wanted to remind people that if he wants to, he could kick ass with the best of them. But, but then as I'm thinking of all this, I kind of had this brief moment of sadness because we are never going to see anybody like him again.
And that's not true. I mean, Peter Gabriel is like him.
I'm a huge Peter Gabriel fan. I think everybody knows that by now.
And, well, I say that because of your affinity with him.
Right.
I'm saying he's an example. He may not have had the same publicity and earth-shattering history, but...
Yeah, Peter Gabriel doesn't have the same reach or meaning on a global scale that Paul McCartney does.
Or portfolio.
I mean, yeah, there's some people who have been inspired and influenced by Peter Gabriel and early Genesis, but, you know, you're going to... hear a lot more the Beatles. I got into music because of the Beatles, or my parents played the Beatles, and that's what got me. He's been going at it for a half century, more than a half century. At the top of the music hierarchy, and I think, you know, just. I don't think we're going to see anybody like him again.
We're certainly not going to see anybody like him again, but we will see others who are equally influential. I mean, it's time for another Beatles, really.
It's time, but I don't know if the industry will ever support that. You know,
sure.
I just,
sure.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that, but. Lastly, on a totally different note, and I'm not sure if you watched it. I think you did, but did you watch The Lady, the Lunar Atmosphere and Dust Environment Explorer?
I didn't, and I'm really upset that I didn't see it because it was an opportunity in New Jersey. I just didn't have the opportunity personally to partake, and it's one of those things where I feel like I really missed out because everybody who saw it was amazed.
Let me share a photo. I've mentioned him before, but there is a person by the name of Mike Black. He's a musician, science. You know, he's somebody I should really reach out to and get on our show, because he's into everything, science, technology, space. I mean, this guy has met. He met Neil Armstrong multiple times and a lot of the early astronauts. And he's also a photographer. Like I said, he's a musician. When Christian and I went to go see the Tony Levin band at the Saint, he opened for them. this guy Mike Black opened for him. So hold on, let me get – there's a photo. Okay, can you see that?
I can't. I can only see me. I mean, I can see something's definitely happening on your screen.
Yeah, okay. Now, can you see it?
No, but I think that's a limitation of Hangouts.
Okay. All right, well.
If I select you, maybe I can. Hold on. Yeah, I can see it.
Okay. So this is a picture he took from Jersey Shore, a little north of from where I was. And what's funny is that these lights coming from, the coast, it kind of make it look like, you know, that's the launch point, but you can see and this is on his Flickr account, but you can, see the arc. And actually this gap, this was a 2 exposures, 74 and 66 seconds, merged using Photoshop, photo merge. But as he mentions, there's a stage burnout, and that's exactly what happened. Watching it, the first stage went up, and then it disappeared for a little bit, and then it reignited and continued on its way. But it was really phenomenal because I actually I went down to Point Pleasant Beach, a little south of where this picture was taken, to watch it. I went on to the beach because I figured it was such a clear night that I wanted to be in as easterly spot as possible to see it. I felt that strongly about being there. So how can I get out of how do I get out of this? How come I can never figure out how to
click on screen share?
Yeah, I can't find. There we go. I have to remember. I have to memorize these icons better. There we go. And now I gotta click on my. Yeah, I know that's me.
right.
Thanks. Thanks for that. Also, before we get out of this and go into our in-depth discussion, just want to follow up on what we talked about in our previous show about with Lillian Powers.
Yeah.
And Vine kicked her off the site.
Why?
Oh, I posted that. You didn't see that?
No.
I saw it on Labor Day. They, because apparently she's too young. They changed the age of when you can be on Vine from 12 to 17, and all the publicity it got her, it brought her to the minds of the Vine powers that be, and they deleted her account, and now apparently she's back, but she just has these like really lame family videos up.
That's really amazingly short-sighted.
Yes, it is, and there has been a lot of uproar over that deletion of her account.
I mean, because who's doing this but those people? Who's doing this but the younger generation?
Right, right. And this was, I think, just before. I think I noticed this as we were driving down to the shore last weekend. So, was that last weekend? I don't mean, whatever Labor Day weekend was. So, yeah, it was right after we did our show. Even, I think, right after I put the podcast up on Friday, I saw the story that they took her off Vine. But I haven't checked back in to see if her account's been reinstated
That's
yet.
That's amazing and sad. I mean, there's plenty of other content, you know.
Yeah.
Because
I was wondering, because, you know, that next day or whatever, I was going, there's like this site that compiles Vine videos from certain users, and it puts them into like these thumbnails. And I noticed a lot of the videos were missing. And apparently it was the data was slowly getting deleted from the servers or whatever. So, all right. So I just want to mention that before we proceed. So John, what do you want to talk about in detail this week?
So the first thing I want to talk about is Evernote. And the reason that I bring it up is because there is an opportunity for me to teach Evernote tomorrow at Princeton Public Library. And for somebody who's not initiated, it's kind of hard to describe how encompassing Evernote is. And Evernote exists on the web, in your browser. It exists as a standalone desktop application, and it exists as a mobile application, right? So you can install it on your tablet, install it on your phone. And it allows you to capture video. It allows you to capture screenshots. It allows you to capture notes. You can just type. It allows you to capture your voice in audio form or in interpreted form, depending on your platform. It allows you to capture web pages, not only screenshots of your entire screen, but web pages as well. And as a result, you have the opportunity, you have a platform essentially to capture things in concert, in context of some particular folder. And so let's say that you're doing research on design. You might, as you navigate the web, come across something that's interesting from a design standpoint and decide to throw it into Evernote. So, and there are many easy ways to gather content from other websites and bring them into Evernote, including automated. If you're familiar with IFTTT or If This Then That, you can use If This Then That to automate certain actions. Like you can say, anytime I create an event with Brian Kelly on my calendar, automatically save it to my Evernote. And once that folder is created, I can easily add content to that from other sources. So if I wanted to use Evernote instead of Google Docs in order to collect our show notes, it would actually be a little bit better because it's more straightforward and more interconnected to the rest of my digital life. Whereas Google Docs, I have to do some work in order to bring a photo in. I have to do some work in order to bring in a recording of my voice. It's not built into the system, whereas with Evernote, it very much is. So I have this opportunity to introduce people to that system, and I'm really excited about that. But if you've never heard of it, or if you don't use it now, or if you've maybe downloaded it and not used it, I want you to give it another chance and really consider how it differs from other services. Not to mention, there are add-on applications like a recipe app and the screenshot app that really enhance its functionality and make it truly beautiful. I also wanted to say that I recently made some technology purchases because more so than anything, I just got a business account for my business. And it turns out that with my bank, if I don't make at least 3 transactions in a month, I get a $15 charge. So I went ahead and decided on some purchases that I had been waiting on. And that is the Nexus 7, the new Nexus 7, because my old Nexus 7 had been cracked. I got it. I love it. I have a few problems with restarting, but that restarting suddenly went away after a recent update, so I'm holding off on my complaint about that. I also desperately needed to replace my phone. I had the Galaxy Nexus S, which was a beautiful phone in its time, but it's a predecessor to both the 3 and the 4. And I've always been intrigued by the Nexus 4, the 4-inch phone, from Google and LG. And the price was recently dropped in advance of what everybody seems to think is the Nexus 5. And I imagine that will show up soon. But in the meantime, I needed a new phone because it just was not working. My Nexus S was extended to the point of distraction. I would have to wait seconds for things to happen on my phone. So I got the Nexus 4, and it is just a beautiful phone. They reduced the price to $199 for the 8-gigabyte version and $260, I think, for the 16-gigabyte version. I went ahead and got the 16-gig, and I'm not looking back. It's such a fantastic phone. It's such a beautiful phone. I recently got my Chromecast, which works very well with these two devices, the Nexus 7 and the Nexus 4. Both send YouTube content, Google Music content. I've left Spotify for Google Music. And also Google Play Store content, like movies. And more apps are on the way. As a matter of fact, one of the apps that I use more than anything on my tablet and on my phone is an app called Pocket Casts. And I absolutely love that app. I use it every time I'm in my car. I don't listen to radio. I listen to Pocket Casts. And with the new advent of this Chromecast being connected to my TV, I wish I could open up Pocket Casts and send that over to my television. But I can't yet because the app hasn't been developed to that degree. So for the first time in a very long time, I sent feedback and said, your app is fantastic. I really love it. I've given it 5 stars, but I really would love to have Chromecast capability. And the tech support sent me back a note that said, thank you. We're working on it, and sent a screenshot of what it looks like on a HDTV.
Wow.
With the Chromecast. Cool. Yeah, it was really cool. I felt like a little moment there. And the other thing that I wanted to bring up,
maybe they knew you were a former top 50 or something influential person in open source.
It's very possible. It's not an open source app, but
I just wanted to bring that up again.
I appreciate that. Still have no idea how that algorithm came up with me, but
yeah, that algorithm was on crack.
Apparently. And then the other thing that I wanted to mention was that YouTube is pretty quickly killing video responses. And it's one of those options that I always saw because they used to advertise it really heavily. You would watch a video and right underneath of it would say, do you want to offer a video response?
Right.
And I always thought to myself, I couldn't possibly, you know, I couldn't. But apparently many people have built their YouTube reputation based on video responses because they used to go right to the top of the comments section and sort of exceed all of the motion of the text-based commenting section. And I'm not sure exactly why they're killing it. It seems like there's a lot of backlash from YouTube lifers who saw this as a great opportunity to get involved with the community and to make connections with people and make friends. So I think that they're probably going to substitute something else like, you know, create a hangout based on this video or something like that. But I was a little bit sad to see that because by the time I found out that it was useful, it was gone, you know. So maybe we should have been doing tech arts responses to videos, you know, or something like that in order to gain a new, different kind of audience. But
Or we could have did the show separately where you did your video and then I would have responded.
Something.
We're going to do like 5 million different formats of this this show.
Well, I got to say, Brian, I must say, the Vine cut of our last episode is the most epic thing we have ever done.
I really want to put in the line where you say we have moments of genius, but it was like 2 seconds too long. I couldn't get it in.
Maybe we moved to Instagram, but I loved what you did, and I wanted to say very publicly, thank you so much. That was beautiful.
Thank you. You should also be thanking me for taking the little cell phone incident out of the episode cut.
You did. You took out the cell phone. You definitely bleeped out all of my expletives, and I apologize to everybody for that. But I was really very excited about that topic. And still am, and we're going to talk about it. But
yes.
I will try to keep the bleeps to a minimum. So,
I was just going to drop a random F-bomb there, but then I decided not to.
Yeah, you shouldn't, because that's more editing work for you.
Yeah, and I almost just did now because I turned into our logo for a split second there. I'm not sure what that was all about. But
I don't know. I didn't see it. What do you have to share in depth, Brian?
Well, let's go into that topic. That NSA spying stuff, it just keeps getting worse, doesn't it?
Apparently.
Was it Der Spiegel? Or Der
Spiegel.
Yeah.
Der Spiegel. Like I said, I think I mentioned it in the last episode, Germany is so privacy conscious.
Yes.
And Der Spiegel is an example of that mindset.
But they reported just the other day that basically the NSA can – any security you have on your cell phone is just meaningless to them. They have full access to almost any smartphone, even BlackBerries RIM are probably the most secure of the phones. They're the worst of the phones, but most secure. And, you know, they can crack through them with no problem, apparently. And now it's funny, you know, some people were commenting, it's like, here, newsflash, the agency that's supposed to be good at breaking encryption and hacking into stuff can actually hack into stuff and break encryption. But it's crazy now. And now,
this is
today,
the thing. We, in the same idea as friendly fire, like, we don't expect the guns to be pointed at us.
Right. And
yet here we are. Like,
yeah.
And all of a sudden, like, the rest of the world is being given the same short shrift as we are. And we should have expected it, I guess, but it doesn't make me feel any better about it. I'm starting to think that maybe we should allow privacy worldwide and not worry so much about what is happening in some other part of the world, and at least be able to gain our own privacy again. But I think that we're beyond that point.
Well, and then today, though, we have the news that broke, which, again, is no surprise at this point, that the NSA has just totally gone way over the line with the information that it's collected of phone records from Americans. Here's from the NPR. Is this the two-way blog? A story dated today, this afternoon, actually. The Director of National Intelligence declassified some 1,800 pages of documents showing that a U.S. spy program collected phone records of Americans that ran afoul of privacy rules for years. And there is a document from March 2009, an opinion from a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court Judge Reggie B. Walton, in which he said, here's a paragraph that he wrote in the decision. Given the executive branch's responsibility for and expertise in determining how best to protect our national security, and in light of the scale of this bulk collection program, the court must rely heavily on the government to monitor this program to ensure that it continues to be justified in the view of those responsible for our national security, and that it is being implemented in a manner that protects the privacy interests of U.S. persons as required by applicable minimization procedures. To approve such a program, the court must have every confidence that the government is doing its utmost to ensure that those responsible for implementation fully comply with the court's orders. The court no longer has such confidence. And after that opinion, the court required the NSA to seek individual approval every time it wanted to query phone records databases, but apparently that has been happening. So this isn't good. It really is not good, and it just keeps getting worse. I mean, at the beginning, I wasn't so annoyed by it because I kind of expected it was happening. But the fact that they are just, have total disregard for any protocols that they're supposed to follow. It's one thing to have the program. It's another to flaunt it and just say, screw it. We have this power. We're going to use it now and screw everything that we're supposed to follow. It's just a really depressing story.
It is. And, it's like, I guess we should not have been surprised, and yet I still am. There are certain institutional practices that we have come to expect that we are about to lose. And it's going to change our society to a much worse state than we even argue and complain about now.
Yeah. I don't know. And even more depressing, the new iPhone announcement.
I mean, come on. There's a lot of plastic in those phones. I don't understand that move. That does not seem like a very smart move for Apple. And I haven't talked with anybody else about this. I've tried to stay very neutral. What are they doing?
I mean,
that is not their market.
The But people are excited about it, and I just don't
understand. People are excited about it because all of a sudden the iPhone is affordable. But
it's really not, though. I mean, it's not. Basically, the 5C is what would have been – that would have been the Markdown 5. So you just put it in a plastic body with colors – and then you gave it Rob Sheridan, who is...
They're making such a big deal about the cases.
Yeah, Rob Sheridan, Nine Inch Nails, Trent Reznor's artistic director, I think, is his title. It does a lot of the design work and, I think, stage design for him. He retweeted something. I don't remember who was the source, but it was like... Poor people, you get a plastic iPhone in a laundry basket. It's like rich people, you get a gold iPhone or something like that. And it's really stupid. I mean, it's basically the same phone in different colors. They jazzed up the insides. I mean, they gave it the A7, the 64-bit processor. And you have the motion coprocessor, which Molly, I was watching the CNET.
Molly Wood is like my favorite new tech anchor.
But she mentioned that the M7 being in the iPhone. Now, was it in the? I don't think is it in the iPhone 5C or is it just? I think it's only in the 5S. I can't remember. But the M7, the motion code.
What would you say that C stands for in the 5C?
Oh, yeah, they're asking. I know it stands for color, but.
Yeah, but it doesn't. It stands for cheap.
Craptacular?
There was a joke on Twit when they did a live stream of, you know, like following the announcement. And somebody said, I think C stands for kids, you know.
Yeah, I don't see. I mean, I think the new OS is a vast improvement, but I don't see.
Why is that? Why do you think that the new OS...
I think it's cleaner. I hate it, the skeuomorphism stuff. I that was just terrible. I it just looks... And from what I've heard, people have used it. You know, they say it's a much better... experience than... the iPhone had become. I mean, it just reached a very dated.
People take a very strong standpoint against skeuomorphism, but you know, there is a beauty to that, and I don't experience that in Android. Every interface of every application that I encounter is slightly different, and sometimes it might be nice to have something replicate the physical experience of that item. And I understand the logic of that, at least. It seems like this is a departure from Jobs. It seems like this is a step away from the way that Jobs would have done it.
Yeah. The one thing Molly Wood mentioned, though, was when they talked about the M7, the motion chip, was that she thought that this meant that they were not going to come out with a smartwatch that the media has dubbed the iWatch.
They'll come out with a smartwatch
when it becomes
popular from Samsung.
I think they're going to see how it does. And
it's not
going to
do well, by the way. Samsung Gear is dead on a rock.
Right, but that's how Apple has operated, though. You know, they saw
FireWire, sure.
They saw how others worked. They saw how others went to market, you know, as, you know, the first to market. And then Apple, you know, under Jobs, would perfect their product. And, of course, helped by the Steve Jobs reality distortion field, you know, MP3 players were around, but the iPod was awesome. You know, there were smartphones, but the iPhone was awesome. And, you know, maybe that's what they're going to do, and maybe using the iPhone as kind of a test to see what kind of apps are developed for the M7 and then see what they can bring into a smartwatch that they feel is viable as its own product. I have to think that with the Fitbit and things like that being so popular in the fitness thing, I mean, a watch makes much more sense than lugging around a gold iPhone on your arm or whatever. So I still think the watch is part of Apple's plans, but I just think they felt it wasn't the right time, and they're going to let others try it and fail. And then
have the Pebble, you know, I mean, they don't, but the Pebble exists. And I think that they're seeing what the success of the potential of that is. But these devices from the spec perspective are ridiculously underpowered. You know, the Samsung watch has a 10-hour battery. How would you like to wear a battery that lasts for 10 hours?
Yeah,
if it doesn't last you the entire day.
Right.
How are you going to use that? Yeah.
I have no idea. Yep. What good is it? The phone, the iPhone today, a giant meh.
Yeah, I was not impressed, but I mean, I'm highly biased.
Right. I'm more of an Apple person. To me, it just seemed like, a big letdown. And, you know, I kind of expected it. You know, there were some people thinking that the C, and Molly Wood and the CNET crew talked about this, that there was speculation that the C could just mean China, and that they were going to announce that the phone was, that the whole announcement was going to be that the phone was only going to be available in China. That wasn't even going to have a U.S. Market, be in the U.S. market, and be like, that would have been really weird.
Wasn't it kind of weird that they only did the live streaming to Germany?
Yes, and that's when I started thinking, wow, maybe they're right.
Seriously.
Yeah, it was weird. It was very weird. But, yeah, today was not one of Apple's shining moments. Although Elvis Costello to close out the event was pretty cool. I didn't
hold on to that point.
I didn't hear, but and he kept playing apparently. He played longer than any closing act in Apple event history, apparently. He just wouldn't stop.
Well, he's a class act, for sure.
So, all right, so let's move on to my last thing for our WordPress discussion, since it's getting late. Something that's kind of interesting to think about. I mean, it's more of a theoretical thing, but... this technique that's being used at the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam, which has partnered with Fujifilm to produce three-dimensional reproductions of his masterpieces. And they're these extremely high-quality replicas that are going to cost, $29,000, obviously much less expensive than an original, but still, it's a pricey duplicate. But what this article, and this is provided by Business Insider, I saw it from Seattle Post Intelligencer, which repurposed the article, is it kind of posits the concept that, as technology advances and you have, 3D printing technology, what if you are able to make a molecular copy of an original work of art? Because if you make it molecularly the same, and carbon dating can't differentiate, what does that do to the value of the original work? And how would you be able to track, you know, over time, you know, where the original is if you have molecularly perfect copies of that original piece of work? And obviously, you know, we're not at that stage yet, but considering, you know, we're now able to print out a gun, which seemed like ridiculous 5 years ago, you know, it's a interesting question, you know, whether what technology is going to do to the value of, you know, masterpieces, you know, classic works of art, you know, if we're able to get to this point where we can make perfect molecular replicas of classic pieces of art.
And I think that artists will react by making harder things to replicate. So,
right, but the pieces that there were, you know, that they talk about are things that have already been done, and those artists are dead and gone. I mean, you know what? You know, like it says here, a replica, even one that's molecularly perfect, would lose its value because it could not be confirmed it was created by the original artist. But works that can be proven authentic will retain their value. But let's say, for the sake of argument, that someday the technology is good enough to replicate art at the molecular level, assuming the high-tech replicas would beat carbon dating, then the work's history of ownership would become the key factor in determining market cost. And
well, it's interesting. What it might do is have a backlash against this superlative handling of post-mortem work. You know, it's like, why not have an artist be recognized in their life when they can point to a piece and say, yeah, that's mine. I did that.
Right. Well, unfortunately, Van Gogh can't do that anymore.
No, but maybe that will greatly devalue his work, you know, or a Jasper Johns or a Rothko, where, you know, it just becomes about, in the same way that many people see a print of a Van Gogh as the equivalent to owning the original for, you know, whatever. $29. This will further confuse that idea that the original has as much value. But I think that that's happening with music, certainly, you know, right? If we buy a CD and we rip it and we get the MP3, or if we get the MP3 from a torrent, what is the difference? How is that differently valued? And then what happens is you prefer to be in front of the artist while they perform, and you would pay substantially for that. But no longer is it especially important to listen to a record album, an MP3, or a CD, you know, because they are all essentially duplicates of the same experience. With all due respect to audiophiles who would say that an album, you know, has this physical groove to it that can't be replicated.
Yeah. Oh, that was weird. Sounded like the computer from Mustache Rangers. it's And that's kind of the theme of the whole article. Is new technology going to devalue artistic works? And it's just an interesting question. I mean, it's not something I've thought about. Also, I just remembered, and I think I sent it, I shared it with you, but I think it was your consulting page on Google+. The community that invited us to join their Google+ circles, the art, tech, and environment. Now I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah, I know the one that you're talking about, though.
Right. So, but I think that's something we should talk about in a future episode, and maybe try to get the moderator of that community. I don't know her name. I know she goes by the Art Inspector on Google Plus, but maybe we should try to talk about that, because it talks about
we should have a conversation with her.
It talks about the environmental impacts of art. You know, how you just, if you're a painter, how you use to dispose of your materials, your paints, and your carbon footprint as an artist, which is another thing that you know people don't think about. So it's a very interesting topic. So, all right, but that's for a future episode. Let's sort of go into our close to our second hour, since we started a little late. Why don't we talk about WordPress, building websites on WordPress? And basically, I am doing that for a client right now. And you know, in the past, you know, with our blogs and my my other venture, the Tandem with the Random podcast, you know, in building WordPress sites, I don't really care about, you know, a staging environment, because you know, it's my site, and there's not going to be anything there that I don't care. You know, I don't care who sees it. You know,
well, we should talk a little bit about best practice.
Then. Right. So basically, but in this case, I'm doing it for a client, and there's stuff that, you know, isn't public yet. So we would like to have a staging area, a development site, and we're building. Well, I'm building the site on WordPress, and, you know, it came to this question of a staging site. And so I've been using the, you know, the protected features just in WordPress to kind of block out posts and pages, you know, give them password protection. But there's other parts of the site that are visible publicly, and I really don't like that. It's not ideal. So I asked John about creating a staging or development area with a WordPress installation. So that's where we came up with this little segment here. So, John, would you like to?
Sure. So this is a common need. You know, that there are lots of hosts, for example, that allow you to, within one click, install a new WordPress environment, and it solves this problem, right? If you're on GoDaddy or you're on Gator host, or you are on any of the sites that use cPanel as a way for you to get access to your file hosting controls, usually there is a way for you to very quickly install a new WordPress instance. So that's the first thing that I would suggest to Brian, is that we look at the host and we see whether or not there's an easy way to either duplicate the site through import and export, or export and import. And also to consider that they are their standalone sites. The way that I work, though, is that I work with clients, right? So if somebody comes to me and they say, I have a WordPress site, I would like to improve it. How can we do that without damaging my current installation? Or I have a standalone HTML site and I have not moved to WordPress yet. You know, is there a way that we can see what it looks like without it being public? And the answer is very simple. For me, I just created a WordPress instance, a single WordPress instance, and then I made it a multi-user site, which is a matter of altering the configuration file. And what that does is it essentially gives you your own WordPress.com. And we should talk a little bit about WordPress.com versus WordPress.org. If you go to WordPress.org, it allows you to download the site software that allows you to run WordPress on your own server, as opposed to running it on WordPress.com. And this is one of the beautiful benefits of it being open source software, is they distribute that code and they say, use it as you wish. Plus, with a little bit of work, as I said, you can go into the config file, make a modification allowing a particular option, restart the server, and you end up with the ability to install many, many sites with one click. With WordPress.com, it's a lot more difficult because you would have to install a WordPress instance under your own name on your account for each of the various instances of WordPress. You would have one for your development site, one for your professional or production site, and maybe even one for testing. And if you are hosted on WordPress.com, that becomes a lot more difficult. And if you're hosted on WordPress.com, you don't have the ability to alter the config file. You don't have the ability to install plugins. You don't have many abilities that you have when you move to your own WordPress install on a local site. So with lamazni.com/clients, I have essentially created an environment where if somebody wants to know what WordPress can do for them, it's essentially two clicks away for me to be able to install a new WordPress site, apply a theme, throw some content in from their existing site, and be able to show them, you know, this is what we're talking about. This is what we'd like to do. And each of those client sites that I have on that instance all have their own presentable URL. So it's, you know, lamazni.com/client/Brian Kelly or lamazni.com/NJLLA or, you know, whatever. And as a result, it's a very easy way for me to configure and maintain all of those sites at once in development format. And I just make sure that in the creation of the site that I turn off the ability for search engine bots to find that site. It doesn't mean that it can't be found. It just means that search engine bots that choose to follow that instruction don't follow that content.
Right.
So my advice to you, and what I said was, this is really hard to describe over text, and part of it is that long description I just gave you. I personally, if I were you and you're doing this work on some regular basis, install an MU site, install a network on WordPress, and then it makes it very easy to duplicate or to import, export, or to create new sites really at the drop of a hat and be able to develop them independent of their original location.
Right. Well, this is just for one client, and it's a site hosted by GoDaddy. So
you should probably go into cPanel.
Mm-hmm.
You should create a new WordPress instance, give it a subdomain, and develop it, you know, in some privacy. That you can either block the directory or you could use WordPress's built-in functionality of quote-unquote blocking search engine bots.
Mm-hmm.
And I also would suggest, because I've run into the problem before, of turning off comments immediately.
Yeah, because, I have done that, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no, the global setting is no comments. I have the box checked to, you know, to block, well, to those that follow the rules, like you said, I have the box checked to, hopefully prevent search engines from finding it, although they can.
Yeah.
The only other thing is,
like, you're talking about this one client, but as far as I'm concerned, you're never going to have just one client. Somebody else is going to find out that you do this. They're going to ask you to help them. And instead of you setting up an entire new WordPress instance, although this sounds like it's maybe not your hosting that you're paying for, should be hosting that you're paying for, setting up a multi-user or network interface for WordPress is a very simple thing to do and saves you a lot of trouble in the long run.
Well, maybe we'll hire you to
get
that all set up for us.
Hey, there you go. Lamazni@gmail.com.
Yeah, but for this purpose, you know, it's a real bare bones. They're trying not to spend a lot of money on this, so that's why they went with us instead of They asked me, you know, can you do this? And I'm like, yeah, it's, you know, the site itself is simple, but I was just trying to come up with this, you know, staging development. So I'll,
does that make sense to you though? For
a solution? That's basically what I've been reading. I mean, I was trying to come up with something a little simpler. I know I mentioned to you, Instant WordPress, which is it's a version of WordPress, a WordPress engine that you can put on a USB drive.
Yeah.
And,
it runs its own Apache server, PHP server, SQL
right.
server.
So I was going to export the site and basically have the contents with Instant WordPress in a directory and put it somewhere where, and it would just be a local experience, but it would, you know,
that would definitely protect you against somebody from finding it, but it wouldn't
give you a lot of functionality. Yeah,
it would give you so much work to do comparative to just a one-click install on one of these services. And if you're already on GoDaddy, just use their one-click service, because also part of it is that particular experience with GoDaddy is going to be more realistic to the end viewer.
Right.
They're going to go to their domain/test or whatever.
Yeah, the one thing I haven't been on GoDaddy's interface
C-panel.
Lately. Yeah, the cPanel, because lately, because apparently after I did this, they changed their site. I mean, I used to know it like the back of my hand, and just the other day they changed, and they sent out an email to users notifying them, but they changed the site, and it's not, you know, I used to know where to find something, and it's not operating the way it used to, so I have to, you know, figure all that out too. I spend more time on the WordPress end, but I looked at GoDaddy and I'm like, oh, why'd they change this now? I don't need this.
Welcome to consulting, Brian.
Yeah, so I went back to WordPress, and so now I'll after we're done here, I'll go check out, you know, the cPanel. And
but I mean, even if this is just one instance where you feel like, you know, that this might not happen very often, it's not going to hurt you to go on your own domain, install a WordPress instance, and make it a network site. And then you can collectively manage all of the plugins, all of the themes that you use, all of the everything. And in the event that you want to have a nuclear option, you can very easily just delete the whole thing.
Right. Okay. Well, that sounds cool. I'll give that a try. Not the nuclear option, but everything else you said before that.
Good.
It seems. So, okay. And if anybody wants to install a WordPress site, I mean, John is the one to talk to about
that. I would love to help anybody get involved with WordPress. And I'm doing that right now in classes, and I'm going to be doing that with Princeton Adult School a little bit later this month. So, if you're interested in WordPress or Drupal or web development in general, and you're looking for some help with that, I would love to help you.
Excellent. And now, before we go into our closing comments here, one final screen share, because this was announced a few hours ago at midnight, UK, but there it is.
I don't see it.
It's coming.
Oh, there it is. Wow.
The epic poster for the Doctor Who 50th anniversary special, which received the name today, The Day of the Doctor.
And you see, who's the dude in the middle?
That is John Hurt.
Wow.
Playing a version of the Doctor. And those are all flaming Daleks, wreckage of Daleks behind him. So the, you know, what everybody is you know, speculating is that, and from what it seems that this is what happened, is that He is John Hurt will be playing a version of the Doctor. Since it came back in 2005, there's been this reference to the Time War, this great Time War between the Time Lords, the Doctor's race, and the Daleks, these metal beings with these creatures inside of them, these mutations. And and in the in David Tennant, who's on the right, who played the 10th Doctor, Matt Smith is on the left. He's the current Doctor, the 11th Doctor. In The End of Time, which was David Tennant's two-part swan song as the Doctor, the Time Lords come back temporarily, and they mention that the Doctor possesses the moment. And the implication is that the Doctor used this moment to... let me get out of that while I'm talking here. To destroy everything in the Time War, and including the Daleks, including the Time Lords, and somehow he survived. And it's always been assumed that there was an 8th Doctor played by Paul McGann, and then the show came back. It was the 9th Doctor, we thought, played by Christopher Eccleston. But it now...
Who was the great Doctor, by the way?
Yes, yes, he was. And it becomes apparent now that there was a incarnation in between that was John Hurt, who may have been the one who pulled the plug on the moment and ended the Time War. And because there was a kind of an allusion to that in the season finale, the last season finale, that the reason why the Doctor considers himself the 11th Doctor was that the Doctor since this mystery Doctor have kind of disowned him as being the Doctor, because he did not act in the name of the Doctor. He did not fulfill the promise that the Doctor made to himself when he took that name. So that's how you still keep the 11 Doctors, but have this extra, it's an incarnation of the same person, but the other Doctors that have come since don't consider him the Doctor because he did a very un-Doctor-like thing. Hmm. So that's how, and that's where we are with the 50th anniversary special. And the BBC announced a whole bunch of special things that are going on today, or not today, but you know, over the course of the next few weeks, old episodes and specials and all sorts of good stuff. So hopefully BBC America, they've been doing a good job with these specials, looking back at the history of the show with the individual Doctors and the companions, but hopefully they get on board and start showing all these things too. So that's my kind of moment of Zen type thing to end the show on, because it made me happy to see this stuff today.
Great. It's a fantastic universe. I still have several seasons to go.
Yes. Yes. All right, so let me get back to my outline here so we can wrap this up. But I guess that concludes this episode of Technology and the Arts. Thank you for watching. And for those podcast listeners out there, when this goes to podcast, thank you for listening. Remember to visit us at technologyandthearts.com. Visit our Facebook or Google Plus page. You can follow us on Twitter at tech_arts. Our YouTube channel is at youtube.com/technologyandthearts, and feel free to look for the podcast with your favorite podcatcher.
Oh, and by the way, Pocket Casts, as well as Dog Catcher, both allow for search of available podcasts, and because our podcast is in the iTunes Music Store podcast set, which feeds into those search engines, chances are you can find them in most popular podcatcher search engines.
Yes, that is correct. So we hope you'll join us again when we return next week for Technology and the Arts. This is Brian Kelly.
And this is John Lemazni. Take care.
The thoughts and views expressed by the hosts of Technology and the Arts do not necessarily represent those of guests of the program. Conversely, the thoughts and views expressed by guests of Technology and the Arts do not necessarily represent those of the hosts. For more information about the podcast you have just heard, please visit Technology and the Arts on the web at technologyandthearts.com.